It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, October 30th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And coming from Los Angeles in the House of Destruction, I'm Allison Sheridan.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
House of Destruction, your remodel has become legend. I hear you do the podcast from a different room every day.
Pretty much. I'm a MASH unit. I can just unplug and plug my dock in. I got diagrams to put it all back together. I can just do it like this.
It's a MAPS unit, Mobile Allison Podcasting Studio.
There you go. That's what it feels like.
All right, we got a lot to talk about. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
At its hardware event today, Apple announced quite a few things. A MacBook Air with Retina display and Touch ID. Also a Mac Mini with up to 2 terabytes of storage and 64 gigs of RAM. And an iPad Pro with USB-C instead of a Lightning port. Also Face ID, but no home button or headphone jack. And a new A12 Bionic processor. All three new items are available now to order, shipping starting November 7th. There's also a new Apple Pencil that can charge while magnetically attached to the new iPad Pro. A new keyboard attachment. And iOS 12.1 is out. Perhaps you've heard new emoji, among lots of other things. We'll talk a little bit more about those other things and Apple's events later on in the show.
Well, Signal released a beta test of a feature for its messaging app called Sealed Sender. It encrypts most of the plain text header information, so only the recipient can be logged as metadata. This would make it more difficult for Signal to comply with some warrants, as it would have to update a user's software to be able to see all the metadata.
Interesting way of defending. And the U.S. Department of Commerce has restricted U.S. companies from selling parts and software to China's Fujian Xinhua over national security concerns. The company makes memory chips and devices, and U.S. companies wanting to sell to it now need a license. The Commerce Department says the restriction is meant to limit a threat to the supply chain for essential components in military systems. Reports say Fujian Xinhua is accused of stealing intellectual property from U.S. company Micron. All right, let's talk a little bit more about good news for Nintendo, Allison.
The Nintendo Switch sold 3.19 million units last quarter for a total of 22.86 million Switches sold. That actually puts it in front of the six-year run of the GameCube in lifetime sales, even though the Switch has only been out since March of 2017. Overall revenue for Nintendo was 221 billion yen, up 1 billion year over year. And the holiday quarter will see the release of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, and Eevee.
Yeah, so they didn't have that many big first-party titles this past quarter that they're reporting on, so that bodes well for the holiday quarter. There's also some third-party titles coming out in the holiday quarter. All in all, rosy picture for Nintendo based on the strong continued insurgency of the Nintendo Switch.
What is it about the Switch? What makes it so popular?
I think
portable.
I think the fact that it's portable and a good game console. Nintendo has never had to be the best, most powerful game console. So the fact that it's not as powerful as a PS4 doesn't matter to people. They're like, yeah, the Wii wasn't either, but we love the Wii. It's the form factor and the titles. We can play Mario, we can play Zelda, and it's a good form factor, unlike the Wii U, which no one understood. They're like, I have this big tablet, but I don't know what to do with it. The Switch is just a tablet.
Okay.
Well, and I mean, I know, not having played it myself personally, but Super Smash Brothers, highly anticipated. It seems to me, especially because you see, you know, such a spike in sales, particularly with Nintendo in the holiday season, that they're going to have another good quarter ahead.
Yeah.
Speaking of good quarters, Sony's Q2 profit rose 17%, driven by gaming, which rose particularly 65%. The company also raised its annual profit forecast by 30%, so it's feeling pretty good about the future. Sony expects annual operating profit of 870 billion yen. That beats analyst expectations of 796 billion yen. 310 billion yen of that would come from gaming, driven by online and the success of games like God of War and Spider-Man. Sony's semiconductor division expects a yearly increase of 17% to 140 billion yen. And of note, Sony controls more than half of the image sensor market currently. So they're in a good place there. And obviously demand has stayed at least pretty good. The only downside of the smartphone business, which is on course to lose 95 billion yen. So not all rosy, but overall a pretty good quarter for Sony. The company intends to scale down smartphones, but not exit the market entirely.
Yeah,
it's so interesting to me they didn't even bring up like televisions. Like they don't even make the list of things up or down anymore.
Sorry, say that again.
They didn't bring up televisions. Right. I mean, so the smartphone business.
It's no longer Sony's bread and butter.
We didn't bring up televisions. You mean just now. I did not go look up the television sales. Sony television sales haven't been neither stellar nor awful, which is why I didn't include them here. I apologize for leaving that out.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking maybe they make so little difference in the number that they aren't of note anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I jokingly call Sony semiconductor or sensor company Sony because it's the image sensor sales that have really been the thing that leads the way for Sony. On the other hand, this quarter and these projections, I might jokingly call it a gaming company because gaming is leading the way. You know, don't forget Sony Pictures Entertainment often is showing up as one of the most positive things in these earnings as well, depending on how well the Sony Pictures movies are doing. So just because we didn't mention it doesn't mean it's doing badly. It's just that sensors, gaming, those are the big things. And smartphones, definitely not the big thing for Sony.
Okay, sorry to mislead then.
Well, I mean, there was a time that Sony was, I mean, at least, you know, what I was buying, like the coolest TV ever, it was like, you get a Sony television, right? And the market is just different now. Yeah, it's Sony, what gets highlighted in a quarterly earnings for Sony is not what would have gotten highlighted 10 years ago. So it's interesting to see that market shift. And also interesting that Sony is not exiting the smartphone market, but certainly saying, listen, we're not putting a lot of R&D behind this right now because we've got other aspects of our business that are doing quite well.
Yeah. Let's move on to Twitter. Twitter released data showing that since it increased the character count of posts to 280, only 1% of tweets reach the limit and 12% are longer than the old limit of 140. Only 5% are longer than 190 characters. Before the limit, the most common length of a tweet was 34 characters. Now, after the increase, the most common length is 33 characters.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could say, oh, it went down, but it pretty much just didn't change. You know, 34 to 33, that's margin of error, right? Twitter did note there are fewer abbreviations. So, GR8 for great is down 36%. B and the number 4 for before is down 13%. While the spelling out the word great is now up 32% and spelling out before is up 70%. Also, they note the use of the word please has risen 54% and the use of the word thank you has risen 22%. Whether that's satirical or not is impossible to say without sentiment analysis. However, overall tweets are receiving more replies. So it seems like raising the character count really just had an impact on abbreviations. People stopped abbreviating things, but otherwise mostly wrote what they would have written anyway.
Well, we've been trying to find ways to increase civil discourse. Apparently, we just needed more characters to do it. That's all that was really necessary, right?
Yeah, I was one of those people when Twitter decided to expand the character limit. It's like, oh, you know, I remember the good old days when it was 140 or nothing. You just had to figure it out. You know, like brevity. Yeah. And GR, the number 8 for great. However, it is kind of freeing to not have to think about that as much. And I've definitely run across that, especially when I just wanted like write a whole sentence. And maybe that sentence is long. So yeah, the difference between having to save a few characters by using kind of, I don't know, weird text, leet speak, whatever you want to call it, and not having to do that at least as much is kind of nice. It is interesting to me, though, that even though Twitter said, okay, you now have twice as many characters as you had before, that really tweets are still quite short. Now, Twitter has also introduced over the years, and this isn't new, but you know, a link that you add is not included in your character limit, and you know, the company has made it easier to get your point across while also adding media to your tweet. So that's a little bit of it as well. But
oh yeah, yeah,
I guess the old school person in me is sort of happy that things haven't changed too much at Twitter.
I love the idea of data analysts who went to got a master's in data analysis, and they're sitting there counting how many times did people spell it GR8.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a database search, right? Like, yeah. Let's.
I also love the stat of please and thank you. I'm sure some people are just being polite, and great, you know, politeness is on the rise. Sounds great, but it's like, what were those tweets actually saying? Are you really thanking somebody? You know, are you quoting a movie? I don't know.
Well, moving along, Uber announced a subscription service called Ride Pass. For a monthly fee, all rides have a flat rate, which Uber estimates will save riders 15% on monthly travel. The app will also keep tabs on how much you've saved. Drivers get paid the usual rates. The plan costs $15 a month in Austin, Orlando, Denver, and Miami, but where we live, $25 a month in Los Angeles, where it also includes free bike and scooter access.
And like, I've really been looking into this stuff because I have a car lease that's up in March, and I'm really trying to weigh my options, because getting another lease would be the most expensive option that I could choose. But then it, you know, affords you some flexibility that is important to me. I have a dog too. And I don't know how many Ubers want my dog in the backseat, but this is interesting, especially because surge pricing is that's a real problem for me, depending on the time of day. 'Cause I live in LA, so this is not as affordable as it would be if I lived in Austin. But $25 a month for something that is never going to spike during surge pricing, that would save me a lot of money. I've taken a trip from, you know, one side of the city to the other, you know, at off peak times, you know, for, I don't know, $15, and during peak time for like 50. It really makes a difference if you're riding Uber a lot, yeah, or, you know, any ride hailing service.
This is really for people who just use Uber all the time in a city. Because, you know, if I travel to Las Vegas, this plan isn't going to help me, right? Like, you know, and I generally end up using Uber and Lyft when I travel. It's an unusual thing for people to benefit from this plan, especially because Uber's covering the differential of the cost by giving a flat rate out to people. So you're paying, and then you're paying for each ride. It's not like you get the rides for free. It's not an all-you-can-eat subscription. Right. And so Uber must think it's going to make more money in people paying for a plan that doesn't end up saving them money, or they wouldn't do it. So it really always, these kinds of things sound like a bad deal to me.
Well, I think, Tom, you and I are the same, that we mostly use it on travel. But I think, like Sarah mentions, a lot of people are just not having cars now, or I know people who send their kids to school. They go in Ubers. That's how they do it. So if you can corner them to say, oh, well, it's better for me to get, I've already got this pass, let me use Uber instead of Lyft, or Uber instead of hitching a ride with somebody else that might be less convenient. So you would probably get more rides from someone who had this pass.
Again, I'm not saying you couldn't benefit from it, but Uber wouldn't be putting it in place if they didn't think most people won't benefit from it, because it wouldn't be making any money otherwise.
But if they do more rides, they make it up in volume.
that's unassailable logic.
Had to happen.
Canada's InterAxon introduced an update to its meditation assistant called Muse that you wear like a headband. It monitors brain waves to give you feedback as you meditate. The Muse 2 arrived Tuesday with the addition of heart rate and body movement monitoring, as well as a dashboard to track progress. The Muse 2 costs $249.
So, you know, those apps on your watch, like Apple has one called Breathe, and there are others out there for various watches that kind of remind you to relax. You know, there are various ones. Some are full on meditation. Others are like the Apple ones, just kind of a light version of meditation. This is for somebody who's really trying to double down on it. And from what I've read, they definitely help focus you, but they can also be distracting because they play sounds. And if your mind starts to wander and it notices an increase in brainwave activity, it'll play the sound louder to kind of drown out your thoughts, I guess, which sounds distracting to me. But I thought it was interesting as a different kind of wearable.
I think it's I love the idea that you're trying to be mellow and really, you know, meditate and zen and all that. And you're dealing with metrics about whether you're doing it correctly. I mean, that's what I'd love. But then again, I don't meditate because I like.
Yeah, I don't know enough about meditation to know if this would the headband idea. This seems like probably it's convenient to wear, but isn't meditation in the eye of the beholder a bit? I don't know that there's a wrong way to meditate as long as you're
finding
the zen
you.
Within yourself.
Yeah, I don't think this is about some like, you know, mystical process that you have to get right. It's about can you get it to help you relax? And
right.
And usually that's just deep breathing and trying to clear your mind. And what this does is it monitors that and says, hey, you're on the right track, keep going. And it's trying to keep you in a relaxed frame of mind. So it may help. It's also a headband you have to put on that's going to leave a mark on your head for 20 minutes. So don't do it right before you have a presentation or something. Even though you need to relax, do it
or do and be like, I am ready for this presentation.
Yeah, you can tell
I've been meditating. See
on my head. by the way, Allison, I was able to find the TV sales fell 25% compared to last year. So not great, actually. Yeah. Not as bad as the phones, but not great.
I have a beautiful Sony UHD TV that I love, but I think I'm the only one who bought one.
Yeah, it's LG, Samsung. They're
TCL.
Leading ways these days. Yeah.
TCL's taken over.
In the budget area, Vizio. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. So as Sarah mentioned at the top of the show, Apple had their big announcement today. New iPad Pro, new Mac Mini, and a MacBook Air. Three products that took them 90 minutes to announce, plus a few other announcements. There's things that we didn't mention. There is a new AMD Radeon Pro Vega graphics option for the MacBook Pro coming November 14th. Supposedly, it'll give you a 60% boost on performance. Blackmagic is putting out a new enclosure for using the Radeon Pro Vega as an external GPU with your MacBook Pros. The dual SIM has got problems if you're on Verizon in the U.S. You can have a dual SIM where one SIM is the primary and the other is the secondary. Verizon's hard SIM, not the eSIM, but the actual card, doesn't do well in the United States on secondary. It drops you down to 2G. So that's something to know. Verizon hopes that can get fixed soon. Those are just minor things, though. But
let me interject one thing. When you brought up the eGPUs, those also work on the MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Okay. No, I wasn't trying to give an exhaustive list of every item it worked with. I just said, it would work the Macs. But let's start with that. Is that one of the things that you're excited about is the MacBook Air?
Actually, yeah, I did want to make fun of Tim Cook first, because even though I have an ever so slight Apple bias, I did think it was comical how excited he tried to get us that they put a Retina display in it. Retina display.
Well, I mean, that is exciting, because that's what kept me from buying a MacBook Air when I got my last Pro, is because I had already seen the Retina and I just couldn't go back. And it surprises me it took them this long.
Oh, 100%. But it took so long. I mean, Retina was coined 8 years ago. 6 years ago, it went into the 12-inch. It was the first time it was introduced in a Mac. So, of course, they needed to do it. But, I mean, he was like, ta-da! Like he, you know, invented fire.
We're late.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphones.
Can I admit something that may be embarrassing?
Yeah.
I didn't watch.
Okay. Well, let me get you excited then.
If I might embarrass myself as well, and I did headlines this morning, which was extremely Apple event based, I didn't watch either because I preferred to watch the live blogs because mm-hmm. that's actually, it was better use of my time for information.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cool. And it paid off. I was a little worried that there might be something really cool to happen on stage, but it sounds like really it was, these are just spec announcements for the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air. And they're interesting. So the Mac Mini is 4 years old, so it needs something.
You guys are sucking all the fun out here, guys. Come on. No, there was some really cool stuff. Okay, let's go through this, the things that aren't just spec bumps. One of the biggest things about the MacBook Air I thought was interesting was that they put Touch ID in it, but did not put the Touch Bar in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it used to be Touch Bar was the only thing.
Nobody really likes
ID.
The Touch Bar.
There's
me.
One new spec was added, but not another. Got it.
Okay. How about the fact that it's 100% recycled aluminum, and so are the Mac Minis. And the way they get the metal to do that is by when they're grinding out the iPads. So they're making so many iPads that the leftover shrapnel of aluminum is being used to make MacBook Airs and Mac Minis.
I mean,
I thought that was cool.
There's no way I'm going to be like, that's not cool.
That's the kind of thing that's cooler when you see it on a presentation than when you hear about it, but still interesting. I think it's still interesting. Yeah. Also, it doesn't affect my purchase decision, though.
Okay.
Keep it coming.
Keep going, Allison. we're playing devil's advocate here. We're all very excited.
Well, and part of the reason is I didn't get to the end. I said it's mostly spec bumps for the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air. iPad Pro, I think, is a significant product. I think this is an impressive product because I could be snarky with myself and say, well, these are all just specs. It's a new chip. It's Face ID. It's a significantly smaller form factor. It's a much improved keyboard. Even though the pencil is more expensive and you have to buy it just for the iPad Pro, the new one, the fact that it's magnetic and seems like it locks pretty solid and charges while it's connected, I think is fantastic. So the iPad Pro is the one that really caught my eye out of these announcements.
Yeah.
I was the most excited about the Mac Mini, to be honest, because I've been thinking about getting one, but they were so long in the tooth before I kept holding out because I actually think that having a Mac Mini rather than the setup that I have currently will free up a lot of desk space for me. And actually, I mean, 2 terabytes of storage is like, that's actually going to be super helpful for a lot of projects that I do. And I, you know, $800, you know, it's not nothing, but that is in my wheelhouse of affordability. And I was most excited about that because I got an external monitor that I'm not using. And the MacBook Air, probably not going to get one. Although if I do go back to the Air, because I'm currently using the Pro, it's more attractive than ever. The iPad Pro though, it's turning into a device that I do not need, but I really want.
So at the risk of being told it was dumb, the two things I thought were interesting on the iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro became an 11-inch screen, but kept the same external size. Mm-hmm. And the bigger iPad, they took the 12.9-inch screen. It's still a 12.9-inch screen, but it's 15% thinner and 25% less volume. So a lot of people like the 12.9-inch size when they're using it, but it's a pain to carry around. 25% less volume, that's going to be huge to me. The 12.9 is my iPad of choice. Being able to go down in size and keep that huge screen is going to be huge to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Puns intended. The other thing, you mentioned Face ID, but it's not just Face ID, Tom. It's Face ID in all four orientations. It's not just people were worried maybe just be in portrait mode, which would have been stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And yet a lot of people use it to read magazines and to read comic books in that mode. Now it's in landscape, but this was better on video. They showed them rotating it and said, going like, it doesn't matter what you do with it. It's always right side up. So all four orientations is huge. What I wanted to ask you guys, they said it was that the new MacBook or iPad Pro, I should say, is faster than 92% of PCs, including i7s. And I wanted to ask you.
Well, but in what capacity? You know, like what are the details of that?
Is it faster than an Xbox, Xbox One?
I thought he said it was faster than.
He said it was. He said the PC iPad laptops. He said it was as powerful as the Xbox One S. The
GPU.
Anyway, on that order, anyway. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of comparisons I'm always skeptical of because there's lots of ways to slice those numbers that don't look as nice. But the comparison to the Xbox One S, I think, is the one that's fair to say, like, hey, this tablet computer is the same as a game console, which is a good way of kind of trying to boost your game cred to say, like, if you've been thinking of your iPad as a way to play games, but you're like, man, but it's not as powerful. Well, guess what? It is as powerful as this particular game console. So that's a good comparison to me. I don't think that the iPad Pro is necessarily the most powerful, you know, saying it's more powerful than 92% of PCs. Maybe an irrelevant stat, because if I want a more powerful PC at close to the same size as a laptop, I can get it. I can get a more powerful Surface. The Surface, you know, arguably is cheaper for the power, depending on how you configure it. All of that stuff is just that's when you want to win an argument against your friend. You come up with those stats. All I care about is, can it do the thing I want to do? And the iPad Pro looks like it does a lot more things than it used to.
In that league.
What's that?
It's interesting to me that it's even in that league to have that kind of a debate.
I think that's more important than trying to come up with stats. Is this is a more credible laptop replacement than an iPad has ever been in the past.
Another thing they said was that you can drive an external display with it.
Yeah, because it's USB-C. That's the biggest. I think that was the one thing that caught my eye out of this whole announcement is finally we're getting USB-C in an Apple product. And maybe we can all someday just live on the same port Surface, and I can have one charger in every room, and everything connects by USB-C, and everything interconnects rather than having the dongleverse we live in now.
Well, I thought it was interesting too. In the context of before the show, we were talking about how I'm using a little USB device called a Luna that allows me to use my iPad as a display. But I get the new iPad Pro, it's the other way around. It's the processor and the computer, and I'm going to use my display as a second display. I thought that was,
that
was interesting. And I did think you mentioned it. The fact that it does magnetic charging is really cool, but it's really cool in the context of not really stupid to walk around with an iPad with a pencil sticking out of the side.
Yeah.
That makes it way cooler.
And I get the impression, because of the number of magnets they have in there, that it will stick pretty well versus the original Surface Book that I had. That it had a magnet for its stylus, but it fell off all the time. And, you know, a nice stiff wind would blow it off. So this looks like it's better. We'll see how it ends up in testing. But it is annoying that you can't use the pencil if you already bought the pencil from the old one on the new one. I hate it when you don't have cross compatibility, but it sounds like it might be worth it this time.
Wait a minute. Did they say you can't use the old one on the new one?
I guess it's the other way around. You can't use the Pencil 2 on the previous iPads.
Right. And there's something about
you also can't magnet charge and attach your old pencil to the new iPad.
Yeah, you would have no way to charge it at all. Yeah. In fact, how is there any way to charge it other than through the iPad?
I mean, you guys are really missing the most exciting part of the event today, and that's that iOS 12.1 finally is going to allow group FaceTime for up to 32 people.
Sorry. Yay. Yeah, no, obviously. I mean, we buried the lead.
When's the party?
The 35 person FaceTime party, you mean?
Well, when the 32, oh. Don't be stupid. When they came up with the announcement that was coming out, that was right when the Apple Mail servers went down. And I thought, I can't really afford to try to do an update to 12.1 right before going on the show. So I did not do that yet. But I'm actually looking forward to it. And the main reason is for audio. So Steve and I cram into the little screen on my phone to look at our grandson. And when he talks, it's about 8,000 decibels to me because it's right next to my ear.
Yeah, right.
And me to him. So it'd be really nice to be on separate phones. So I am super looking forward to multiple people, possibly not 32, though.
Well, very cool.
Yeah, lots of Apple announcements today. You know, hopefully the company's done for the year. My goodness. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. I'm just kidding, Apple people. Just kidding. If you have Apple stories or any other story at all, you know what you do? Submit those stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
What's in the mailbag, Sarah?
Oh, glad you asked, Tom. Aaron actually added some perspective on practical app access via subscription. We were talking about the idea of Google possibly adding a subscription model to Google Play. Aaron says, I use Amazon's free time subscription for my family currently, provides apps, books, videos, and content controls. The interesting thing about the Android and Amazon app experiences is that most of the apps are supported by advertising. Highly off-putting, especially because the contents of advertisements can't be chosen or monitored like the apps themselves can. One of the primary benefits of the subscription is the content and experience management. There are no advertisements in the subscription apps. There can be in-app purchases. Applications seem to be better vetted for content stability. Along with the Fire 10 tablets, price, and performance value, it makes for a good experience for our needs as a family. I'd be curious to see if Google is aiming for something similar or taking another approach. Aaron says, it's effective for integrating people into your ecosystem. I really didn't want to be in the Amazon ecosystem. I prefer Google Home and the Chromecast and Google Home Minis. I don't like that I can't integrate the two. However, I'm about to purchase more smart home devices like a camera and a doorbell and the like. Unfortunately, it seems that I'll have to choose an ecosystem. Odd as it seems, though, the Amazon FaceTime subscription free time subscription has introduced a consideration for the Amazon ecosystem I would not have previously entertained.
Interesting, interesting take and an interesting comparison of that Amazon ecosystem as potentially a sort of roadmap for what Google might do.
Yeah, thanks so much, Aaron. Really good feedback. And thanks also to Allison Sheridan for being back on the show. Even though your house is in upheaval, you always bring the knowledge. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Well, I'm over at podfeet.com. I have many podcasts there. And one of the things I wanted to make sure Tom heard about in particular, and everybody, the latest episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond Light was with a former NASA engineer named Darren Beyer, who has now turned into a science fiction author. He's written two of his four books of the Ngazi series. And his tagline is bring science back to science fiction.
Nice. I love that. I can't wait to listen.
Super cool. Very to cool. Talk to him about his time as a NASA engineer was absolutely amazing. Really, really cool.
Sounds really fun. Go check it out, folks. Podfeet.com. And also check out patreon.com/DTNS. We have a special bonus post from Threatwire today. Shannon Morse at Threatwire has an extended explanation, both in audio and in text, about the exemptions to the DRM from the U.S. Library of Congress. So if you're a subscriber over there at any level, you can take a listen or read that at patreon.com/DTNS.
If you have feedback for us, guess what? We have an email address. It's feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
And by the way, that Shannon Morse that I was just mentioning, she's on the show tomorrow.
Woo!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.